Economic developments at the G20 were overshadowed by the Iran news, but the G20 leaders, who met last night at dinner and all day today in Pittsburgh, issued a final statement this afternoon outlining a number of economic reforms. NPR's John Itzty now joins us to talk about them. Hi, John.
Hi, Robert.
I guess the big news here is the decision by the G8, the group of eight wealthy nations, to pass the baton to the G20, meaning the responsibility for monitoring the world economy now rests with the bigger group.
That's right. In their communique, the leaders say we designate the G20 to be the premier forum for our international economic cooperation. And even if that might seem a little self-serving, we've got to remember that the G20 represents about 90% of the global economy and about two-thirds of the world's people. Most importantly, I think this officially gives emerging powers like China, India, and Brazil a place at the table where global economic policies are developed. In a written statement announcing the shift this morning, the White House said, "This decision brings to the table the countries needed to build a stronger, more balanced global economy, reform the financial system, and lift the lives of the poorest."
So is it goodbye to the G8?
Well, my understanding is that G8 will continue to function, but it will not be viewed as the top global economic decision-making group, which it has been since the 1970s.
Now, one big issue in the headlines before this G20 summit was a call by French President Sarkozy for caps on bankers' bonuses. What did the leaders decide about that?
Well, they didn't go along with Mr. Sarkozy, and they didn't say an awful lot about it. They did issue some recommendations on compensation, but no real details in their statement. So we'll have to wait to see exactly what they're going to come up with there.
And what about capital requirements, the cushions that banks hold against losses? Any progress in forcing the banks to increase those cushions?
Not a lot of progress there either. The leaders urged banks to set aside more capital, but put off coming up with specific figures until the end of next year. So we got a timetable, but no hard figures.
And there was a big U.S. goal at the G20 summit to get China and other big exporting countries to export less and to consume more at home while the U.S. starts saving more. Any news on that front?
Well, the leaders endorsed what's called a framework for strong, sustainable, and balanced growth, and that framework will be used to make the kinds of changes you just mentioned. The idea is to avoid the big imbalances in the global economy that contributed to the financial crisis. There was concern China might not sign up for this because it feared it might not grow fast enough if it had to depend more on internal growth instead of exports. But China appears to have gone along with the deal. One carrot was the endorsement by the leaders of a plan to give emerging economies, mostly China, a bigger voting share in the International Monetary Fund. The plan calls for rich countries, specifically in Europe, to give up 5% of their voting rights to the emerging nations. So I think we can look at this summit as the one that cemented the role of China, especially, and other emerging nations in global economic policymaking.
Thank you, John.
You're welcome, Robert.
NPR's John Itzty joining us from Pittsburgh. So who's in the G20? Some members are obvious, some not so obvious. You can test your G20 IQ at the Two-Way, NPR's news blog. Go to npr.org/two-way.